This is David Rovics, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
Hey everyone, you're here with Rosie and me, Bella, tonight on the Climate Action Show on the Community Broadcast Network, either through 3CR or Skid Row. Tonight, we're focusing on the current demolition of the 44 public housing towers in Melbourne and on the environmental and sustainability impact, the current public hearings, and the many different types of activism going on to oppose these demolitions. Thanks to Rosie, we'll be speaking with Steve Minton from Office, Dr. Kate Shaw, a critical urban geographer from the University of Melbourne, and active activist Kat McLeod. Steve Minton, a landscape architect, is one of the managing directors of Office, a charitable non-for-profit design and research practice in Melbourne, made up of a group of architects who assist community groups in advocating for better outcomes within their built environment. We'll be speaking to him about Office's role in the opposition to the demolition of the 44 towers and the research they've done. Dr. Kate Shaw from the University of Melbourne is a critical urban geographer with a background in urban planning, focusing on the cultures of cities and the political, economic, and social processes that shape them. Kat is a longtime climate and social justice activist and a designer passionate about saving the public housing towers. She's attended the rally and pickets for the 44 towers. Dr. Kate and Kat will speak to us together on the current research about the demolition of the towers. So stay tuned to hear all about this and more. First up, we speak with Steve Minton.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for joining me and Rosie today. First question for you. What role has the office or office been playing in the opposition to the demolition of the public housing towers?
Yeah, so we've been working for the past few years with public housing communities on the developing alternative proposals looking at refurbishment of public housing. So starting with a set of walk-up flats in Ascot Vale, then a series townhouse development down in Port Melbourne, and now looking at the towers, specifically the Flemington estate. And so the work that we do, so the government previously said that it's not possible to refurbish them and all these sorts of things. So the work we've been doing is working with communities on trying to dispel that myth, I guess, a little bit. So like, how could they be refurbished? What would it look like? What are the strategies? What's sort of possible? So trying to push back on that initial narrative around it not being possible. So now it is possible. And then so what, you know, how might we do that? And then giving the community the tools to sort of advocate for themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And I know most of your project or your strategy is revolved around retain, repair, and reinvest. Could you talk us through a little bit about what that means?
Yeah. So firstly, the first and foremost approach is retain, which is about retaining the existing communities. So keeping communities in place, because that's especially important in vulnerable communities. There's an enormous amount of mutual aid that happens within public housing estates. And then also keeping people nearby the services that they rely on. So schools, healthcare, you know, public transport, local doctors, all that sort of stuff that is really important for people to have those ongoing long-term connections with. Second one's repair. So that's repairing the existing building. So lots of the public housing has been not maintained particularly well. A lot of it's aging and it needs some repair. It needs to be retrofitted, upgraded to meet contemporary standards. And then reinvest is about reinvesting any of the savings from doing it this way into building more public housing. So often that's looking at infill within the estate. So looking at places, things like on-grade car parking and things like that, where there's ways in which we can get an increase in housing.
Yeah, for sure. And also I've read as well that Office had, and I'm assuming still is, speaking with and sort of connecting with residents in public housing towers within those certain areas to see what their main needs and concerns are. In terms of environmental concerns and sustainability, were there any sort of concerns there that popped up from those residents?
Yeah, for sure. So we go, I guess the thing to say there firstly is that we only do these studies if we're invited in by the community. So Ascot Vale, Barrett Beacon and Flemington all had communities that were interested in working with us and allowing us into the estate, but also into the home, so we can, have a look around and chat to people. So really important to talk to people throughout that process and understand what the buildings are like to live in. So to that environmental question, the buildings that we've looked at all perform pretty badly, like thermally. So they're, the NATHERS rating, all those sort of things are pretty bad within the towers, particularly. But there's some pretty minor upgrades that would remedy that, in terms of just, retrofitting insulation, double glazing, these sort of things, which are pretty basic, minor works, could all probably happen with people still living in there. So yeah, the buildings get pretty hot in summer, pretty cold in winter. They're basically just concrete, but there's nothing else. It is just concrete. So those were the sort of the main things, is that comfort for people. Yeah.
And as well as that, as well, with that, like with the increase we're seeing in the effects that climate change, has on the weather system and has on conditions, is it making it a bit more unaccessible to live in public housing towers, concerning like, how they are built and they're not good for keeping in heat or pushing like, yeah, sorry,
Yeah,
but
no, I
yeah,
think,
you know what
yeah,
I'm saying,
no,
yeah.
absolutely. So I think that the thing there is, like, absolutely, the weather's, it's particularly getting, hotter, which is a big concern here, and especially in the buildings, which does push for the need for retrofit of them to bring them up to the standard. So there's towers that are being slated for demolition, this year, basically. So Flemington, North Melbourne, Richmond, but there's some towers that won't be, towards the government's plan, aren't being demolished for another 30 years. So that's residents living in buildings, apartments, their homes being really uncomfortable, really bad for their health to live in them for 30 years. And there's no real plan, as far as we can tell, to do that sort of lighter work refurbishment that's really essential at an absolute minimum level to make it comfortable for residents. And these are, public housing residents, because of the lack of investment in it, typically vulnerable people. There's a lot of elderly people. There's a lot of people with a multitude of health issues who are a lot more susceptible to the issues around heat, particularly. So there is a real need to look at a large scale retrofit of these buildings, and just like a long-term plan, not only for the towers, but for all public housing as well, to make sure that the residents who are these vulnerable communities can have that resilience to climate change and global warming. Yeah.
It's interesting how our governments, who usually are not at all interested in long-term planning, when it suits them, they can say, "Oh yes, we'll do this in 30 years," and in the meantime, just hang in there, not knowing what's going to happen. And yeah, so.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I would say there isn't a plan, let alone if for the 30 years. There's an announcement, and now there's a how do we work out how we're going to do this thing. And I think, like, yeah, the towers, they need work, absolutely. But it's about working out what the community actually wants, and empowering those communities to have those decisions, which that they just currently don't have any agency in that decision at the moment at all. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is obviously a big problem for those communities, and putting them at a disadvantage. But it also, as well as that climate effect having an effect on them, why would demolishing the public housing towers also be a significant contributor to the climate emergency as well?
Yeah, so I mean, the construction industry is one of the highest polluting industries in Australia. I can't remember where it sits exactly. You might know better than I do. But basically, you're demolishing an enormous amount of concrete, you're putting it in a landfill, and then you're essentially duplicating that amount of concrete again to build a new building. So, like, we can't hit our net zero targets if we continue to construct and demolish in the way in which we have to date. Like, it's not physically possible to do that. So the amount of embodied energy in a building is an enormous amount. Like, concrete particularly is, incredibly carbon intensive. The other thing to note, to a previous sort of couple of questions, is the amount of power and energy it takes to heat and cool these buildings is enormous, because they perform so bad thermally currently. And so over the course of the life of a building, the amount of energy it takes to run these buildings is really, really high, because they do perform badly. And then the tenants pay those bills as well. So if you know, which are often they don't have the money to do it. So often they're living in really hot apartments in summer, really cold in winter because they can't afford the energy bills to live comfortably. So there's a range of different ways, but in terms of like a broader, there's a broader argument, a question here around how do we build in a way that actually can meet those net zero targets that we've got in place in Victoria. And the current proposal of demolition and rebuild just means it's just not possible physically to do that.
And it's interesting. Well, it's not really interesting. It's terrible that people like, you and office and lots of other architects have the solutions. It's just a matter of the will, and we can imagine, the reasons the government's not interested in these good solutions. How do you sort of deal with that? You seem very calm about it, but
I wouldn't say we're very calm. We project calmness, but we're pretty angry about it all, I would say, and pretty furious about the way in which residents and people are being treated and the lack of transparency around which they're being treated. I think like for us, it's like we have a set of tools and skills that we can use to the best of our ability to help the communities that we care about. And that's what we can do. It's like we produce this work, and now there's residents out there protesting, people chaining themselves to drilling rigs, all those sort of things. That's not the type of activism that we're good at. Like we're t good at a different type. So it's like acknowledging what skills, resources you have, and that they're different to the other people's skills and resources. But working out for us a way in which we can contribute, where we can, to help these communities where it's possible.
And that's fantastic, because the way you talk to the communities and support them, and then that gives them the power and the confidence to do the protesting and stand up for themselves.
And so on that, like most of the things we're finding, like the community knows that. Like they know their apartments are too hot. They know they're too cold. Like they're aware of all of these things. They know their lifts need upgrading. Like it's just providing the evidence to support what they already know quite a lot of the time. And we can, we get engineers and all these sorts of people, quantity surveyors and everyone to support that work. So they've got a really strong evidence base to then go and, stand up for what they already know to be true through their lived experience.
Can I just ask about, you mentioned Barrack Beacon earlier, and you'd done a office have done a fee had done a feasibility study and had plans for an up retain, repair, invest sort of upgrade. What happened with that in the end?
So that estate's now being demolished. So Margaret Kelly, who we worked with very closely throughout that campaign, and Jeannie as well, they fought right to the end. Homes Victoria ended up demolishing the estate around Margaret. So she was living there as they demolished, literally next door to her. They demolished the entire estate and just left her unit there. And eventually the police came and dragged her out because she wasn't going to leave unless that happened. And so now that estate's been demolished, and they've started the new proposal. So basically the Homes Victoria proposal, which is no public housing, a large amount of private housing, and a huge amount of density on that site.
And like Rosie said before as well, office, I believe, has been fighting against or opposing this demolition for a few years now. So you've had these plans in place. I've also with the Ascot Vale estate and these different communities you've been trying to work with. Have you guys, is there maybe a shift in plans or some new ideas now that you're seeing many of these places being demolished?
I think the thing for us at this point is like we don't need to keep doing a study. Like doing another feasibility isn't going to change Holmes Victoria's mind. I don't think, like, the evidence is there, and I don't think that they're interested in that evidence. So I think now it's about, what are these different communities doing, and how are they doing sort of grassroots activism as well? Like, there was a really large scale protest maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago from the State Library about saving public housing, and I think as the demolition works do start and they evict more people, like, that sort of on the ground protest and activism is sort of the last resort almost. Like, there was recently a parliamentary inquiry which wrapped up last week, so the findings of that will come out, so there may be some pressure through that. But I think the point for us is that, yeah, the state government's not interested in listening to evidence on this, unfortunately. So it is about how do you put different forms of pressure on them, through different types of activism. Yeah.
We're going to have a couple of, I'm not sure if I mentioned to you, we're having Kate Shaw
Yeah. Yeah.
on
Kate.
this show as well,
Kate's
yeah,
great.
and Kat McLeod, who are there on the ground supporting the residents and
Yeah. Great.
doing fantastic work with a big group of people. So, yep, that's the last resort.
I think
And
so, yeah.
yes, let's. And with the new anti-protest laws being proposed, it's not looking great, but I'm sure, like Margaret, they're not going to give up until
Yeah,
the last
absolutely.
man standing. But Leah, let's hope that we get lots of more community support behind this. Yep.
Just as well on that, I'm not sure. I know you were speaking before as to office is sort of kind of a more different take on the activism we're seeing as opposed to on ground. It's more using your skills in architecture to do those studies to uphold, like, uplift community voices. But are there any ways that maybe you would recommend, or maybe office would recommend, and if people are interested, how they get involved in the situation and how they can help fight back?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of sort of community-focused orgs that are there. So there's and Kate and others might speak more about this. So there's the 44 Towers United group, there's Safe Public Housing Collective, there's a range of sort of community orgs. Like, there's like Rahu as well, range of like community-focused orgs who are there to support the residents and help them where they can, and yeah, to protest where that's necessary as well. So I think that, yeah, seeking out those orgs who are on the ground at the moment is really important, and being able to put that pressure on, to show that, the community does stand with these residents and what they want as well, is really important. Yeah.
And I think 3CR does a pretty good job of that, with lots of very powerful people speaking out against what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Can I just ask another question? Just about there's a couple of terms in that are used a bit, just for people who might not know what they mean. For example, embodied energy. What does that mean, and why is that important?
Yeah, so it's basically the energy that it takes to make a thing, basically. So it's like, in order to make concrete, you need to mine a bunch of different materials to make this singular thing. So it's like, it's not just saying what does it take to get the concrete there or to pour it. It's like, what has gone into the life cycle or the chain to make that singular product. So, or if it's steel, like, it's got to be mined, it's got to be forged. It's all of these processes that happen to get it into the building material. That is an enormous amount of energy, and which is often not thought of. So all of these building materials have this level of embodied energy within them. So if you're ripping a building down and then you have to replace it again, like, you're doubling the impact of all of that. But if you can reuse things, that embodied energy is still within that, that material, which greatly reduce the climate impacts on those things.
Thanks. And another term, uncaptured costs of the demolition model.
Yeah, so that's something that we talk about, because the state government just talks about the construction costs. We're quite interested in the costs broadly of the project. So one of the really big ones is that in the construction costs, they typically don't take into account the relocation costs, which are really, really big. So the Homes Victoria are currently buying properties off the private market. So if you go to an auction, you might be bidding against the state government, which is pretty concerning. I think 17% of the people being displaced out of Flemington and North Melbourne are being put in private dwellings in the area. So you can think about that's a lot of apartments that are being and houses that are being taken off the market, driving up those prices. So we take into account those costs as well as the health and the education costs. So if the health costs are basically the health impact on someone over the course of their life if you forcibly relocate them. So if there's research out of the UK that says if you forcibly relocate residents, 1 in 100 of those residents will die because of that relocation, because it has an enormous health impact both on stress, obviously, but also if you're not going to your normal GP, you're going to a different doctor, you're not linked to your normal services, you're not supported by your community, that has an enormous amount of health impacts. And similarly with the education, like if you move, you have to forcibly move your kids out of school, that's going to impact their education outcomes for the rest of their life. If you have to do that multiple times over the course of their schooling, that's obviously going to have long-term implications. And that all has an effect on the economy. We would prefer not to talk about people's lives in that way, but it is unfortunately the necessity of trying to use an economic argument as one of our arguments that we can use. Yeah.
And Richard Dennis had some great, interesting things to say in your book, Retain, Repair, Reinvest, about the Ascot Vale Towers. And as he pointed out, the government seems to be really not like public housing, although, as he said, we already have public housing that is continuing and works very well for, and he used the examples of defence public housing, university chancellors live in public housing, the prime minister lives in public housing, and it seems to work perfectly well when they want it to.
Absolutely.
And I haven't listened to any of the hearing recordings yet, but I do want to because have you listened to them?
Well, we were
Oh,
in
you
one.
were there.
Yeah,
Of
I was
course.
there.
Yeah,
Which
because
was.
my friend was saying how amazing all the professional, the architects, the engineers, just how, how do you expect how professional and calm and objective compared to the ridiculous questions you were being asked and trying to, I'm looking forward to
Yes,
listening to it.
it wasn't the most enjoyable experience I've had. No, it was a
No.
bit ridiculous. And then to see the way in which Homes Victoria and the housing minister approached theirs, and
You're probably
can't
used to
prove
that, are
that they
you?
were putting forward. Yeah, we're pretty used to it, but it's still it's infuriating, to be honest. But yeah, so we went for our one, which is first thing in the morning, and then just listen to the most of the rest of the day in between meetings and things. But yeah, I think that's the issue, is that like I was saying, is like you can produce the evidence, but if the evidence isn't listened to, it is a political decision. Like it ultimately that's what it is. So
And
yeah.
what's behind it? Economically, it makes no sense. Environmentally, it makes no sense. Socially, it makes no sense. Obviously, there's vested interests. Is that all it is?
I think it's
And
getting
our
rid of
government's too
public
weak.
housing. Yeah, I think it's the complete destruction of public housing. So it's gone. So then the state government doesn't have to deal with it, basically. They
And the
don't want to deal with it.
complete disregard for people. It's just
Yeah, absolutely. And
quite
I think that
unbelievable.
there's a very close connection between the property industry and our state government as well. So I would say that that has quite a bit to do with it. But I think ultimately, it's how do we not have to, it's just neoliberalism. It's how do we get rid of public housing? Like it's not, it's as simple as that, I think, unfortunately.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the interview. I wish we could chat more, but it was lovely getting to chat to you. And thank you so much for your insights. It's been very helpful. I'm sure people will really enjoy it.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for
Can
having
I?
me. I appreciate it.
We have a right to be in public space undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned, stay radical.
Do you have a fine you're worried about? If you are struggling to pay a fine, there can be ways to help you deal with it. You may be able to get your fine lifted or reduced where you are experiencing difficult life circumstances, such as family violence, mental health challenges, disability, homelessness, or drug or alcohol dependency. If you have fines from not paying toll roads, you may also be able to get the fine waived if you're experiencing financial or other hardship. Speak to a community lawyer or financial counsellor to get advice on your options. You can find your local community centre on the Federation of Community Legal Centres website, fclc.org.au. You can find a financial counsellor by calling the National Debt Helpline on 1800 007 007. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
If you or someone you care for is struggling with a mental illness or other disability and you need someone to talk to, you can call the Wellways Helpline. Wellways Helpline is a volunteer support and referral service that provides information to people experiencing mental health issues or other disabilities, as well as their family, friends and carers. We're here to talk if you are feeling socially isolated, seeking information about mental health or mental health services, or just need someone to talk to. As a peer-based service, everyone working at Wellways Helpline has a lived experience of mental health issues or disability. Wellways Helpline is a national service and operates Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., excluding public holidays. So if you're struggling yourself or are struggling to help someone else, please call Wellways Helpline on 1300 111 500. That's 1300 111 500. Wellways supports 3CR.
You're listening to 3CR with Rosie and Bella. We've just spoken with Steve Minton from Office about their research into retrofitting the public housing towers. To hear a bit more about this and the activism going on, we're now speaking with Dr. Kate Shaw, critical urban planner from the University of Melbourne, and activist Kat McLeod.
Thank you so much, Kat and Dr. Kate, for joining us today. It really means a lot you were able to find time in your schedule. Dr. Kate, I was just wondering as well, I had a read through. You had a reader's response on Crikey to the public housing tower discourse on there, where you mentioned a report. This was in 2024, so February, I believe, so more than a year ago. But you mentioned a report that was going to be released by architects at Melbourne University about the environmental damage of the demolish. I was just wondering if you had any insights on, you know, what that report is about and why it's going to be so environmentally damaging, if you could give us a bit more.
That report was released in late 24. It's been around for, was it late 24 or late 20? Oh, late 23. It's been around for a year, I think. It comes from the Retrofit Lab at Melbourne University, which is also involving the young architects from Office who have done a lot of work on the retain, repair and reinvest model of retrofitting mainly the public housing walk-ups, although they're now starting to apply that logic to the towers that Dan Andrews announced would be demolished in their entirety, all 44 of them. It also involves people from the Centre for Urban Research at RMIT. So it's quite, you know, it's a cross-disciplinary roundtable that produced this report. There are about 10 authors, and it's well worth a read. It's online. If you just Google Retrofit Lab, University of Melbourne, it'll come up. And it looks largely at the environmental consequences of demolition of 20-storey buildings, which is obviously massive, Now all that concrete goes into landfill and the internals. I mean, it's a horrendous exercise. And of course, should only be undertaken if absolutely necessary. So what this report looks at is largely the viability of retrofitting those towers, and looks at retrofits that have been successfully carried out in other places in the world. And the argument is pretty clear. For those buildings that are structurally sound, retrofit is by far the most environmentally and economically and, of course, socially least damaging option. And of course, a lot of the towers have already been retrofitted to a sort of a lower degree. But the many tenants that most of us have had contact with who are living in those are very happy and find them very comfortable and secure homes. So, you know, this whole kind of discourse from the government about these buildings that substandard and need to be demolished is being shown to be not the case at all. The key factor in all of this is that the government is presuming that all of these buildings are structurally unsound and need to be demolished there, because a lot of the engineers and architects who were involved in their original construction who are still around says they were constructed incredibly solidly. And even though retrofits and you know adjustments need to be made to all sorts of components of the buildings, and they were built 70 years ago, so sure, why not? Their bones are still solid, so they don't need to come down. And the government is stonewalling any information on that you know indicates that they've done any work or assessment at all, really.
Could I just ask Kate or Kat or any of you, either of you involved, I believe that back in 2007 there was a architect competition to repair or restore the Footscray public housing towers. Do you know anything about that? And apparently BKK won the competition. And actually did start on a couple of the apartments and it worked extremely well. Do either of you know anything about that? Kat, I know you, your architecture firm enters a lot of competitions. Were you involved in that one?
No, we weren't involved in that one, but I do know that BKK did produce a little pot.
Yeah,
that added a balcony and possibly a small room, and that it was trialed on perhaps one or two apartments and seemed to be a success, and then discontinued as an idea. So,
yeah,
discontinued in whole and part. So you go, well, that was a big waste of money. What was that about? Was that a demonstration of, oh, we care, let's try this, or was that a not sure why that fell in a heap. Seemed like a good idea. There have been a few of those. I know Peter Brew did something as well on top of 120 Flemington Road, which is that little thing that looks like a cloud. Well, I don't think whether they've been renovated or not doesn't seem to really matter, because the Flemington Towers, they actually had upgraded in 2017, and so they're pulling them down. So, you know, that's doesn't seem to be much of a problem. And there have been talks from on the picket line where residents have said, oh, I've just got this notice that I'm getting a new air conditioner put in whilst they're proposing to demolish their building. So, does not seem to be a very consistent policy of, And I was speaking to somebody who had just had dinner in a beautiful flat in the Richmond Towers, which had just been renovated, and that's going as well. So, he said it was fabulous. Great. Tenant was extremely happy. Had been there for 25 years, moved out while it was being renovated, and now they're aware that it's going.
The Homes Victoria plan is to demolish all 44 towers. So, the Footscray Towers are included in that plan. That was, an announcement that Dan Andrews made at the end of 23, When he was retiring as premier, he just did this complete kind of bubble, brain bubble of we're just going to demolish all 44 towers in Melbourne, and then left it to Cinderella and Homes Victoria to carry through on that statement, which, to their great discredit, they are.
What do you think is behind that decision?
Not much of it. I don't think it's much. I don't think there's much there at all. I think that it. I don't think there had been any work done. It's pretty clear to me that there have been no evaluations, or at least very insubstantial evaluations done of any of the buildings. And there was a court case in the Supreme Court earlier this year that your listeners will be aware of, where there was a challenge led by some of the residents of North Melbourne and Flemington, and represented by the Inner Melbourne Legal Centre, that challenged in the Supreme Court the state government's denial of human rights of the tenants by forcibly relocating them from their homes. And in the course of that trial, Homes Victoria was asked to produce the evaluations of the buildings, and they dissembled, and it was pretty clear to me that they don't exist. But in any event, the court adjourned while the government went away to have a think about that. And the government came back a couple of days later saying, actually, our evaluations are cabinet documents and therefore not subject to be released. So they are not releasing them.
And the courts just had to accept that.
That's the law that protects government. I mean, only political pressure can require the release of cabinet documents. Government is protected by law in that regard. So yeah, the court has no had no choice but to accept it.
It's definitely interesting. We were talking with Steve Minton yesterday from Office about this as well, and all the they've gone through hearings with other engineers, other architects, showing their reasoning for the retain, repair, and reinvest and their findings. And it's interesting, there's a lot of engineers and architects, and also academics like yourself who have all this information, who have gone out to the communities, who know what the buildings are like, and are giving all this information about, hey, this is possible. Actually, repurposing them, not demolishing them, is more economical, more sustainable, more environmentally friendly. And it's interesting to see there's not much evidence from the other side, like contributing to saying, like, no, we need to demolish them. But yet, they're still, kind of refusing to listen to you guys. How does this make you feel? And do you have like any ideas or sort of plans you're building from this to try and have yourselves more heard?
Yeah, I mean it's a really good question, Bella. I mean, a lot of people are feel incredibly dispirited after seeing the government just point blank stonewall. I mean the office guys have been putting up their triple R model on the Ascot Vale estate and the Barrack Beacon for some years, and just do not get any coherent response from the government. And most of your listeners will be aware, I think, that there was a series of public hearings just recently following a parliamentary upper house inquiry into this program. And the minister, Harriet Shing, presented to answer the hundreds of submissions that were put to the parliamentary inquiry as to why the towers should not be demolished. Like, as you rightly say, on environmental, social, and economic grounds. I mean, it is just vandalism on all three points. The minister completely, completely stonewalled, did not accept, did not even did not accept any of that any of the arguments have any merit. but barely accepted that they exist. Do you know? I mean, it was not just a non-engagement, it was a complete denial of the fact that this research exists. I mean, there are reports from universities, from engineers, from architects, as you say, researchers who have been looking into this field for years, and they are completely denied. It's really fascinating. It's almost Orwellian. It really is this sort of black is white sort of stuff going on. So yeah, the general kind of collective response to watching Harriet Shing's presentation was that everybody that I've spoken to needed to have a very stiff whiskey in the process of listening to it.
Yeah, I would totally and utterly agree with that. There has been so much brilliant research and really precise information gathered and presented to the government around this topic, and it has been largely ignored. Not largely, completely ignored. Yeah, and to listen to the inquiry, the public inquiry, and listen to all those engineers and architects who've given up hours and hours and hours of their time voluntarily with expert information, and to have it just ignored is, it's not only disgraceful, it's embarrassing on the part of the government to be so single-mindedly focused on what can only be a public, I mean, a political initiative. What is driving this is politics. There's no common sense in their approach. Otherwise, they would release the information about the state of the state of the towers.
One of the wonderful things about the rally, which was organised by Rahu and SPHC, so Rahu is the Renters and Housing Union, a bunch of fantastic, mainly young people who have stepped in where the former Tenants Union, now Tenants Victoria, no longer exists. I mean, Tenants Victoria have vacated that space of advocacy for public housing tenants. And SPHC is the Save Public Housing Collective, which itself is a kind of an umbrella group for various other small housing activist organisations. So this was a kind of a joining up of various housing advocacy groups. And so there is a bunch of us, Rahu, SPHC, various academics from Melbourne University, the Centre for Urban Research at RMIT, the Inner Melbourne Legal Centre, and lots of other groups as well, are now doing our very best to create a joined up initiative where, for once, the housing advocacy sector and the low cost housing advocacy sector join up and stop arguing about, I mean, there are lots of good things to argue about within the sector, but we just need to put those aside and agree that the destruction of the 44 towers is bad policy, and work towards putting political pressure on the government to review that policy, because no amount of research or good information is going to make a dent in the government's approach, because it knows that it exists and it refuses to engage with it, right? So we need to step to the next level, which is not trying to persuade, it's making them listen. So to that end, there is a public meeting being held at the Capitol Theatre in the city on Swanston Street in October, a while away, 23rd of October, at which the joined up sector, in as much as it is able and willing and prepared to join up, there will be it'll be a public meeting and a strategy meeting to work out what other actions can be taken from there. And those actions could range from further research to squatting.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get a letter signed by as many architects as possible. to the government. I know, of course, that it's going to be ignored, but that's just jolly to see how many architects will put their hand up and sign it. Yeah, and then I think, as Kate says, it's going to come down to, at the end, it's going to come down to the interventionist, interventionist activities of, everybody who's concerned actually getting down there and stopping it physically, And luckily there are quite a lot of people. There's a lot of people on that housing picket chat. I mean, that's the biggest chat in all my years of activism. That's the most people I've ever seen on any chat who are really motivated and really angry.
And there are
Yeah.
probably a lot of activist groups of all types that would stand right behind the public housing tenants if called upon, ready to do whatever's required. And maybe we need to demand a climate trigger to apply to public housing demolition as well as, fossil
Well,
fuel
that's a really
projects.
good idea. That's a really good idea because this is a climate issue as well as a social justice issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It
It's
is about avoiding all those emissions. You
yeah,
know,
and
and we can't have these endless symposiums about, how we need to lower the global emissions from the building sector, which I think is about 40%. Or something. It's range roughly between 35 and 40%. And so there's all these symposiums about, retrofitting as the way forward. And so you go, okay, here we are, guys. Here we are, architects. We have the poster boy for that right here in Melbourne. Yeah. So let's do it. Let's get behind it. So I think the profession should largely get behind it. And look, there's been some people who've done some amazing work, like the office guys and the architects and the engineers from Retrofit Lab. This is Brendan McEvoy.
McCubbin, yes.
Yeah, McCubbin. Excellent.
Brendan
Sorry.
presented at the Supreme Court hearing as well. I mean, there's, yeah, McCad is so right. I mean, there was so much time. A lot of it is voluntary. A lot of it is done out of academic hours. I mean, the hours of people who know their shit going into this campaign is greater than I have ever seen.
And the goodwill that goes with it, unlike what the government think about when they make these decisions. So I was just also noting that the Footscray public towers that I mentioned before, that the two ones that were improved, I was just reading that it took the apartments from a 1-star energy rating to a 7.5-star energy rating, and it cost about 120,000 per apartment, and that would have been reduced by 50% if mass produced. And it's just completely insane. Apparently, when after they did the two, the government changed, and it was just.
Unfortunately, we only have like 2.5 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought real quickly before we wrap it up, I know I was just going to ask as well, like if people listening wanted to get involved, how would they do that? I know Melbourne Uni, well, this is pre-recorded, but so tomorrow, Tuesday, there's a panel discussion at Melbourne Uni about the future of public housing in Victoria, which Dr. Kate will be speaking at, I believe.
I'll be one of several speakers. It's being held at the Melbourne School of Design in the Architecture Building and Planning Building, on Melbourne Uni campus, on the Carlton campus, at 4 o'clock on Tuesday the 19th. Well worth attending. I think the discussion will be really good. There's some pretty hot people on the panel, so yeah, not including myself. But also there's this public meeting in October, and more information on that can be found through Rahu, through the Renters and Housing Union. So they're the sort of the auspice for the technology. There's an Eventbrite page already for people to indicate their interests. So yeah, there are many, many things to, I mean, and there'll be a rolling calendar of stuff coming out. I mean, this issue is not going anywhere.
Yeah, for sure. And Kat, did you have anywhere you'd like to guide listeners to for more information as well?
Well, we will be trying to put out a letter for all people in the building industry to sign to government. We're not quite sure how or where we're going to place that, but just possibly through Australian Architects Declare, or just as an informal letter. So watch your inbox if you are a building industry professionals, not just architects. And then of course you can come down to the pickets. In fact, if you are curious, you could actually just turn up at the housing towers that are being taken down at the moment, which are in 120 Racecourse Road. If you're interested as a just a member of the public, just keep your eye open, and if you see anything suspicious happening at a housing tower near you, report it to Rahu or SP Safe Public Housing Coalition, SPH, because really it is going to be up to the public to actually intervene here. It's going to be up to the residents and the public to intervene in this situation and take action. And the pickets have been fantastic. They've been really well attended by a lot of people, very, very eager to help.
Can I just ask you, Kat, do you think that the letter that you're organising to be signed by all as many architects as you can get, do you think that there is still a lot of architects who don't really understand what's going on, or do you think that by now, so I just wondered if you're drawing their attention is to what's going on in this letter you're asking them to sign might,
Yeah, I
inform us.
agree. Inform. I think it's, yeah, of course, in part it is actually information as well, because, being an architect is a very onerous job. It's quite difficult. You're quite busy. You have a lot of balls in the air that you're juggling all the time. So being across every piece of information is really hard. And I guess a lot of architects would just assume, like most other people that you speak to, would just assume that, oh, the government must really know what they're doing if they're proposing pulling down all of the public housing towers, that there would be a really sound reason. So I have actually spoken to quite a few who've said, oh, no, but there must be, they're past their use by date, and oh, they're supposed to be this structurally unsound, and all this sort of stuff. I was like, oh, really? Well, and where are you getting that information from? Yeah. So, yeah, in part, the letter is also about informing the wider architectural community.
Course, the mainstream media is not reporting any of this either. So unless you read, Dr. Kate's articles or
Yeah, really. There's probably those parliamentary that public hearings should be made public. It should be widely broadcast, because the housing minister's complete inability to answer the question about why won't you release any structural analysis after these people had sat through listening to a whole bunch of really well-informed engineers and architects and professionals about the building, her inability to actually answer that question was quite hilarious. They asked her over and over again, and she said, haven't you ever stood in a tower in the freezing cold? And then they asked her again, she said, haven't you ever stood in the tower in the boiling heat? And they said, no, we actually just want to see the structural report, So yeah, it was a bit of comedy. It was really.
This has been the Climate Action Show tonight. Thank you so much for listening in to me and Rosie looking into the current situation about the environmental and social implications of the destruction of the 44 public housing towers here in Melbourne. If you weren't able to catch it all, that's okay. A podcast version of the show will be uploaded to our Spotify page, The Climate Action Show. Thank you so much to all of our guests on today's show too. Steve Minton from Office, Dr. Kate Shaw, a critical urban planner from the University of Melbourne, and activist Kat McLeod.